Good afternoon. I'm Mike Nichols with NBA. It's my pleasure to welcome you to our final education session of the afternoon at this regional forum in gorgeous Long Beach, California. Today's topic is an overview of state taxes in business aviation, focusing also a little bit on California state taxes since we're here in California. It makes sense to do that. I'm pleased to have with us today George Rice, who's a certified public accountant based out of San Diego, California, and his law practice specializes in aviation and marine. I'm sorry, not law practice, but accounting practice. Sorry, George. George, it's all yours.
Thank you very much, Mike. I try real hard not to practice law. Let's start with that right off, because there's a lot of lawyers here. Sometimes it's difficult. I'd like to thank everyone for coming. I know it's kind of late in the day. I was wondering if the 3 o'clock time slot was going to be a popular, highly attended slot, and I was thinking, well, maybe it's toward the end of the day. Maybe folks won't come. And then one of the bankers explained to me that, no, everyone will be here because cocktail hour is when I'm finished. So with that, I'd like to say thank you to Mike, and thank you to the MBAA for the opportunity to be here. And as Mike said, today we're going to take a quick look at state tax issues. We're going to try not to get into federal tax issues because they've asked me to focus on state tax issues. So what is that? What are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about sales and use tax in general. We're going to talk about personal property taxes in general. We're going to have a specific discussion of the Western states, being a regional conference. And due to the huge breadth of the body of information that involves all of the states, I've decided to limit my comments to a few states. We're going to talk about Arizona, California, Nevada. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about Oregon. And we're going to talk a little bit about Washington. As time permits, and if there's interest, we may talk some about Florida and New York. So to get right into it, sales and use tax. Sales and use tax is a tax that's imposed on the event of the sale or transfer of personal property. Pretty basic. Or a tax in California and other jurisdictions is the use tax is imposed on the storage, the use of, or the consumption of personal property within the taxing jurisdiction. So that's what the sales and use tax is about. As a general rule, the sales and use tax is mutually exclusive. It's not always the case, but as a general rule. The rates and methods of imposition among the various states that we will talk about vary significantly. Most states have a sales tax that's effective on the transfer of a business aircraft. We'll talk about those states that do not. In many states, the law offers a variety of exemptions. We're going to spend some time talking about those exemptions. I'm sure there's many in the room that are familiar with a lot of those exemptions as they relate perhaps to California, if you're from California. One of the points of my whole presentation is that the exercise of planning for an aviation transaction is an absolute necessity. If an aviation transaction is concluded without the benefit of planning, it can be a very, very expensive proposition. I hope none of you have ever had that circumstance, but many times closings occur and the planning hasn't been done, and then it's an I gotcha kind of a situation. And sometimes we can, as planners, can help in that situation, but it's always best if the tax advisor is consulted in advance so that that structure can be provided to protect you, the taxpayer. The thing about planning that I want to make this point is that planning is the art of finding the most tax-efficient compromise. We'll find that there are many, many conflicting objectives, not only with state tax issues, but with federal tax issues, with the aviation regulations. And so it truly is the art of trying to find the compromise. In terms of priority of the planning hierarchy that one would normally look at, you would normally consider the avoidance of sales and use tax as a primary objective because it's just such a large tax and generally a lot of money. The second item that a planner would normally consider would be the federal depreciation implications of the transaction, and then the third priority for planning would be property taxes. Which brings me to the subject of property tax. General aircraft in many states, but not all, are subject to a tax based on a value. That value is determined differently in different states. Typically, property tax is imposed by the county where the aircraft is hangared or tied down. Methods for determining the assessed value among the states varies widely, and practices for determining value among counties within California varies widely. These variances can lead to differences of opinion about the assessed value of the aircraft, and this, of course, forms the basis or provides the opportunity for an appeal. One point I'd also like to make about property taxes is just as a general notion, when an aircraft spends significant time in more than one jurisdiction, there is many times an opportunity to achieve apportionment between these states. So, for example, if you have an operation or an owner where significant time is spent in California and significant time is spent, say, for example, in Florida, you can approach the county assessor and establish a fact pattern with the assessor that aircraft achieved situs in another jurisdiction, and you can actually achieve apportionment of the property tax bill. Property tax planning is an important aspect of aviation transaction planning because in most jurisdictions, the tax is imposed on a lien date. In California, that lien date is January 1. So sellers beware, right? If you're planning on selling your aircraft and someone says, well, gee, let's wait till after the first of the year because we'll push the depreciation recapture off till my next tax return, or many other good reasons they may have for wanting to conclude the transaction early in January versus sometime in December, just keep in mind that if you still own that aircraft on January the 1st, and if that aircraft is located in the state of California on January 1st, you're going to be obliged to pay the full amount of the property tax on that aircraft on January 1, regardless of the fact that you sell it on January 10th. So if you're doing transaction planning and you're contemplating moving your transaction closing forward for other valid business reasons, you might want to consider moving the aircraft out of California or other strategies that could be brought to bear to avoid that personal tax. I've had clients ask me, look, I paid the tax. Is there anything I can do? Can I go to the county and request a refund? And the counties just have a totally deaf ear. They just do not care. So the answer to that is no. There is no provision in the law. The property tax attaches as of the lien date. So if that aircraft is in California and you own it on January 1st, you owe the tax. So that's a quick overview of property tax and sales tax issues. I would like to now move into a discussion of some specific states. And we're going to talk about Arizona. But I'd like to start by just asking, does anyone know which states do not impose a sales tax on or use tax on aircraft transactions? There are a few. Oregon is one. No, Nevada's not on my list. I used to structure some transactions in Nevada. Anyway, my next slide is this is not a political map. In this representation, the orange states impose both a sales and a sales and use tax and a property tax. The blue states have a sales tax or a use tax, but no property tax. So we're looking at the green states, right? The green states have no sales tax and no property tax. And then there's Alaska. If you just look at the surface of the regulations in Alaska, it appears that there's no sales tax and no property tax. But Alaska has some very strange province regulations. Alaska is divided into provinces for political purposes. And some of those provinces have property taxes. So even though it's not imposed at the state level, you can run into some fairly strange property tax implications in the state of Nevada. So we're not going to try to talk about all those states because that's just way beyond the scope of this limited presentation. But those are the states in which you can conduct business in the aviation community and be tax-free. Oregon, Montana, New Hampshire, and for all practical purposes, Alaska. Okay. This slide, I'm not going to go through this, but what I've prepared a summary of the various states that we're going to talk about today. I don't have this available as a handout, but should anyone like it, just write state tax summary on the back of your business card and hand it to me, and I'll see that my office mails it to you. So we're going to move right into a discussion of the taxes related to Arizona, a neighboring state to California. Arizona has a state-imposed sales tax of 5.6%. There are also local taxes in the state of Arizona that range from 1% to as much as 3.25%. Arizona, however, does not have a property tax. But, again, this is what Nell Sanders at Conklin Decker would call an I gotcha state. The registration fees in Arizona can approximate one-half of 1% of the average fair market value of the aircraft for the year. And I have no idea what that means, but it sounds like it could be roughly a 0.5% tax on the registration of your aircraft in the state of Arizona, even though they say they don't have a property tax. So we're going to talk about exemptions in each of the jurisdictions. So let's go through them. And so what we're now talking about is the ability to structure your transaction in such a way that your transaction is exempt from tax. We're not avoiding tax. We're going to go through a process. We're going to structure a planned transaction that's going to allow us not, we're going to fall through an exemption or qualify for an exemption and therefore avoid the tax. So what are the common types of exemptions that are available in states? And I've got this same list for each of my states. First off, as I've said before, Arizona is a blue state, but be careful about that registration. So a common carrier exemption is available in many states if the aircraft is used in common carriage. Arizona has this exemption. However, it does not apply to 135 operators. It's only available for 121 operations. Arizona does not have an interstate commerce exemption. In other jurisdictions, we have a concept where if an aircraft is used in interstate commerce and it meets some rigid requirements, which I'll talk about in a minute, you can avoid sales and use tax on the acquisition of the aircraft. Arizona has no such provision. Arizona does have what is referred to as a casual sales exemption, which is where you as an individual, you're not in the business of selling aircraft, and on occasion you sell an aircraft, you are not therefore obliged to report sales tax and collect and remit sales tax on that transaction because you qualify for this casual sale exemption. However, that does not necessarily preclude the buyer from being subject to use tax in the state of Arizona. Arizona also has what is known as a flyaway exemption, whereby you non-residents of Arizona can remove aircraft from the state after they've been purchased in the state and avoid Arizona taxes. Different states treat trade-in allowances differently. For example, in California, they don't care if you had traded in an aircraft and got a $4 million reduction on against the contract price of the new aircraft. They are going to tax you on the contract price of the new aircraft. Arizona does it differently. They give you a dollar-for-dollar trade-in allowance reduction on the purchase price of the new contract so that you only pay the tax on the net amount of the transaction. Certain states, primarily California, have what is known as a not-for-use-in-the-state exemption. This has been the subject of a lot of controversy in California over the last 2 or 3 years. Arizona does not have such an exemption. And so that brings me to the sale for resale. Obviously, if you're in the business of selling airplanes and you sell airplane to a dealer, you're going to be entitled to the exemption under that resale clause. So that's a quick rundown of the provisions in Arizona. Now I'd like to talk about California. So I have that same list of exemptions. First off, the rate in California, the state imposed rate for sales and use tax is 7.25%. The counties impose an additional tax that ranges from 0 to 1.25%. So, for example, in Los Angeles County, that rate is 8.5%. In California, we have this concept of a common carrier exemption. And in California, 135 operations qualify for that common carrier exemption. So it's entirely conceivable that you, as a private party, you're not a charter operator at all. You're a private party. You purchase your aircraft. You subsequently place that aircraft under a management agreement with a charter operator of your choice, and you qualify that aircraft within the next 12 months. You can avoid California sales and use tax under what is known as the common carrier exemption in the state of California. In order to do that, more than 50% of the, and this is in the California regulations, the definition is a little bit contentious, but it's, they refer to operational use, and it's defined, and it's kind of an awkward definition, so I won't go into it, but essentially more than 50% of your flight time that's defined as operational use in the first 12 months after you purchase the aircraft must be qualifying 135 commercial time. So it's basically a race with the clock. You just make sure that you manage your aircraft in such a way that within the first 12 months that you get 55 or 60% of your total hours on the aircraft were flown under Part 135. Now there's a few, those of you that have been down this path, and I know a lot of you have, there's some gotchas in this program as well. Several things come to mind. First off, the State Board of Equalization will not acknowledge or count in the numerator of this fraction any Part 135 flight that's flown without passengers or property on board. There have been some very interesting letters from some law firms that are represented here today to the Board of Equalization trying to find out if liquor being transported for the passenger that you were going to pick up on this deadhead flight would qualify as property, and therefore that flight is in the numerator. It appears the answer to that question is no. I'm sure there's going to be further discussion on this subject. In fact, California is undertaking to have hearings from interested parties on this whole subject. So if you're interested in participating in some rulemaking, there's an opportunity. The other requirement of, to meet the common carrier test is that you must meet a revenue threshold, which is the lesser of 20% of the value of the purchase price of the aircraft or $50,000 within that 12-month period of time. That revenue cannot be generated from your brother or your sister. It can't be generated from related parties. You've got to go out and actually get unrelated third parties to charter the aircraft. There is, however, no specification in the regulations whatsoever that says that you must charter that aircraft at any particular rate per hour. So, for example, if you're going through your test period and you're short on hours in the numerator and you want to make sure that you qualify for this exemption, you can have a chat with your charter operator and perhaps you can have him run some specials or whatever to draw more action for your aircraft and make sure that you qualify for the exemption. So that's in California is a very useful tool. What's unique about this particular exemption in California is that, as opposed to some of the other exemptions that I'll talk about in a moment, you do not have to acquire the aircraft outside the state. You can buy this aircraft in the state of California, have your closing in California, and still qualify for the common carrier exemption. Okay, in California, this whole issue of casual sales is not acknowledged in the law, period. They just don't care if you're selling one for your entire lifetime. It's taxable, period. So California doesn't have what is called a casual sale exemption. California does have, however, what is called a flyaway exemption. For those of you folks that are not residents of California, you can come to California, buy the aircraft in California, remove the aircraft within 10 days, and use it for no other purpose while it's in the state of California except to remove it from the state, and you will not be subject to taxes in the state of California. I just want to make a quick comment about leases. Contracts designated as leases that are entered into in the state of California, which contain an option to purchase for a nominal value at the end of the contract, are subject to tax. So it doesn't matter whether or not you structure your transaction as a lease and try to take the position that, well, I didn't really sell the airplane or I didn't really buy the airplane. The Board of Equalization is not going to accept that position. So that's a, okay, to move now and talk a little bit about property taxes in the state of California. One of the main things that you need to know, and I think this is the big, perhaps a big item of take-home value, for especially for aircraft owners. Each aircraft owner in the state of California is obliged by law to submit to the county in which that aircraft is hangared a document annually, which is known as an aircraft ownership verification statement. It may have some other title on it. Different counties call them different things. But whether or not, and typically the county will mail you this form and you fill it out and you send it back. However, should you not receive such a form in the mail, you're still obliged under the law to submit this form. The due dates for these forms vary in different counties. California does, the Board of Equalization allows the tax assessors at the county level a good deal of flexibility in the administration of the California law. For example, in Los Angeles County in 2006, I don't know what it will be for next year, but in 2006, Los Angeles County, the date for filing this ownership verification form was March 19th. It has been other dates in prior years. So it's on the form. It's also on their website. You can go to their website and find out what date. Different counties are different. Orange County, I think, is April or May something. So different counties have different dates. But the crucial thing is that you understand, it's your obligation to know that date. If they don't mail you the form, you've got to get the form, you've got to fill it out, and you've got to get it back to them by the due date, or you have a hidden tax at the county level known as a penalty for failure to file this form, and it's 10%, 10% of the tax. So if you have this middle-aged G4 and it's worth, you know, fair market value $20 million, your tax bill is $220,000, you fail to file this form, you just spend another $25,000. So you need to check the county that you live in and make sure what that date is and deal with that form. There's particularly different counties have different personalities. I don't know, quite know how else to say it. In most California counties, you can file this ownership verification form actually online. Or you can go online and get the form, fill it out, and just sign it and mail it in, I should say. I don't know if you can actually file it online, but you can get the form. Los Angeles County is a little different. They have a form that they want you to fill out, and there are some fairly unique language styled questions on this form. And I know that this is not a very good graphic, but I wanted to just put this form up for all of those of you that might be operating in Los Angeles County. I think this is a little bit of a trick question. There's a question down in the circled area of the form that says, you know, do you follow a maintenance program? Does everyone here follow a maintenance program? Of course you do. No operator in his right mind would confess that they don't operate, you know, under a maintenance program. But if you check that box yes on this form, Los Angeles County will say, okay, your aircraft is covered by MSP. You have an insured maintenance program, and they will go into Blue Book and add value to your property tax bill based on that box being checked yes. So be very careful when you answer that question on Los Angeles County's form, because they will literally go in and add value. Again, if you have a large cabin aircraft, I believe, I'm not certain of this, but I believe Blue Book is adding $450,000 if your engines are covered by MSP for a G4. So it varies for different aircraft, obviously, but just be aware that you need to know what that question means when you fill it out, when you fill out this form. Backing up just briefly, this form goes in and it asks a lot of questions. It's got total time on the aircraft, total time since overhaul, time to overhaul on both engines. They want to ask a lot of information that's going to affect the value of your property. California mandates in the law that the assessor in each county use a standardized handbook or a standardized index for purposes of determining value. The law doesn't prescribe that they use each county assessor use Blue Book, but the guidance that's published by the State Board of Equalization for the counties recommends that they use Blue Book. I suspect a lot of you are familiar with Blue Book. It's a valuation service. Several things about Blue Book that I want to make reference to. So let me. I think I've got a slide here somewhere. Yeah. And again, I'm not sure how readable this is, but the data that you put on this aircraft ownership verification form is used by the county assessor. Someone on their staff will actually take this data and input it into this Blue Book software to determine the value, the fair market value of your aircraft as of the lien date. So one of the first things you need to know, if you too are using this software and trying to audit your own assessment, so to speak, you need to reset your computer date, your system date on your computer, to the first of the year. If you're in August of 06 and you just got your tax bill for 06, and you, boy, I just can't believe this evaluation, let me run this through my Blue Book, you want to reset your system date back to January 1 and then make that analysis, because what will happen, the adjustments for airframe time, the adjustments for engine hours, and all those adjustments that are calculated in this analysis will vary fairly significantly depending on what date the system date used, because the software uses the system date to drive calculations. That's the point I'm trying to make. So if you're using this product, you need to be sure that you have set your system date to the lien date. And then if you're like me, I forget to move it back, so all my emails for the next 3 days are dated January 1, and it's a huge hassle. But you'll get the right answer if you change your system date. I want to go back a slide. So the assessor's handbook recommends that you use the Blue Book. They make adjustments for total airframe, for MSP. They also make adjustments for such things as the condition of the paint, the condition of the interior, whether or not you've upgraded avionics. A couple of years ago, I had several counties asking me about upgraded FMS systems, and they're trying to get involved actually knowing how much these aircraft are worth. But under this hot topic, one of the things I want to talk about today is the advent of certain counties have begun to include sales tax as a component of value in determining the assessment. Now, under California law in general, and I'm not a lawyer, but I've read the statutes and so have you, under California law in general, when you are assessing property tax for property tax purposes, it's appropriate for the assessor to include the invoice price of the equipment, any delivery cost that it took to get the equipment put into place, and any tax that was charged on that equipment. So if you're talking about installing a computer system or a hydraulic press, it would be appropriate for sales tax to be a component of assessed value. However, in the case of aircraft that are used as common carriers, a few minutes ago we talked about the common carrier exemption. If your aircraft qualifies as a common carrier, we believe that it's inappropriate for the county to include this sales tax as a component of value because that aircraft is a commercial aircraft and is exempt from sales tax. So for them to include sales tax as a component of value on a commercial aircraft is tax on a tax that didn't exist. I mean, you didn't pay the tax when you bought the aircraft, but now you're going to be taxed on that as a component of value. Not appropriate. The assessor's handbook on this subject seems to be in reasonably clear language would support the position that I just indicated to you. The lawyers in the State Board of Equalization in Sacramento support the position that I just explained to you, that if it in fact is a common carrier, that sales tax is not a component of value. There are certain counties, however, in California, we're in one today, that takes a very different view. Los Angeles County does not agree with the State Board of Equalization and has chosen to take a different path. They are including sales tax as a component of value in your assessment, even though your aircraft is used as a common carrier. This has been appealed, and I'll talk about the appeals process in just a second. And several cases have come to hearing on this subject. And of those cases that have come to hearing, there are two that I'm aware of that where the Los Angeles County Appeals Board found in favor of the taxpayer. Well, lo and behold, what happened next was Los Angeles County Assessor immediately postponed indefinitely all the pending appeals where that was one of the contentious issues. The Los Angeles County Tax Assessor intends to take this to Superior Court and try to enforce his position. I won't go into the specifics of the regulations that he's citing, but those of us that have looked at it carefully think that I believe there's a low chance that he's going to succeed at Superior Court, but it's Los Angeles County, so you just never know. At any rate, this is one of the issues that causes taxpayers to appeal their property tax assessment, is when they find out, items of this nature. So in this example, if you can read it, it starts at the top with the fair market value of the hull, and then we make an adjustment for the state-mandated location adjustment. So you go in the Blue Book, and the value of the hull is $20 million. State law requires that the assessor immediately reduce that by 10%. And then you make all these other adjustments, and in this case, the assessor has come back and added sales tax as a component of value. We believe that if that aircraft is used as a commercial aircraft, that that's inappropriate. Before I move on to Nevada, I want to talk just briefly about the appeals process. And again, if you want to appeal your property tax assessment, you're entitled to do so. Different counties have different filing dates for filing such appeals. If your aircraft is hangared in Los Angeles County and you want to appeal your 2006 property tax bill, you're in good luck because the filing date is November 30th. So you have plenty of time to go out and do that. Various other counties, Orange County, for example, is September 15th. So again, it's a county-by-county thing. You have to know which county you're in and make sure that you comply with their rules. But this next slide, or the previous slide, wherever it went, again, most counties will allow you to go online, fill out an appeals application online using a PDF format, and they make it fairly easy for you, and you just print this thing out, sign it, and shoot it in. Los Angeles County, once again, is not that way. They have a three-part NCR form that is represented here. They want you to type it, but let me tell you, this form will not fit in your IBM Selectric, which you still have in the garage, because it's too wide. So you end up filling these forms out by hand. They get very persnickety about they can't read your writing and all of that. But the point is, you put the assessed value on the form. You put what you believe your opinion of value is, and you send it in, and that starts a process. The process goes something like this. After a few months, someone in the assessor's office will call you and say, well, how did you arrive at the taxpayer's opinion of value? And we normally send them one of those Blue Book analyses that shows, okay, we took the adjustments to the engine hours and we used Blue Book the way we think it should be used, and we got this number, you've got this number, here's the difference. That staff person will go talk to his or her boss, and it's generally a negotiation, is my point. And generally, the value that I put on or other practitioners put on this form, you may not achieve the full extent of the reduction you're looking for, but generally, if your facts are right and you've presented the facts correctly, and if the assessor had the facts incorrect, you can make progress on reducing the tax bill without ever going to an appeal. And that's typically, in my practice, that's what happens. Occasionally, we have a set of facts that the assessor just doesn't, there's just a true difference of opinion, and then the case gets scheduled for an appeal hearing. You go to the appeals board hearing, and the taxpayer presents their case, and it follows very loose rules. It's not like going to court. It's a fairly informal proceeding where the board is up front. The taxpayer comes and his representatives sit on one side, the assessor's on the other side, you both tell your story, and then the board decides. So it's generally that straightforward. The only recourse the taxpayer has beyond the county appeals board is to go to Superior Court. Very few cases actually go to Superior Court. There are some that do. There are some folks here today that have some cases that have been taken up to Superior Court. So that's how the appeals process works in California. It's a relatively easy process to go through, and you shouldn't be shy as taxpayers about challenging the county's assessment. You can call the local tax assessor and get into the Marine and Aircraft Division, tell them your tail number, and they will send you a Blue Book analysis that you can then set it on. You can have your people that know your aircraft, know the times, and you can do an audit fairly easily on your own and determine whether or not you think the assessor was being fair to you. Okay, so I think that covers the points that I wanted to make about California. Are there any questions about California? One moment, please. I'm sorry, Mike, I caught you off guard.
Would that also apply to the California, to any exemption, like the California Interstate Commerce exemption?
I'm sorry, I didn't talk about the interstate.
You did
commerce.
Not.
I did not. Let me
you
back up. Thank you very much. I somehow got right by that. Let me go back to that. In California, we have what is known as an interstate commerce exemption. This is the exemption that most current aircraft buyers are looking to avoid California sales and use tax. What this exemption requires is that you acquire the aircraft, you must close, you must take title outside the state of California. And once you have title to the aircraft, your first use of the aircraft must be used in interstate commerce. It must be used for business. Interstate commerce implies a business use in the law. So the way this is structured is you structure the closing someplace outside of California, and you make sure that the principal that purchased the aircraft is there. The aircraft leaves that closing site, flies to another, and makes a landing. And if I'm managing the transaction, that second landing or that first landing after the close is also outside the state of California, and the principal conducts business. The aircraft re-enters the state of California even on the same day. Come home, and then it's a six-month test period. And again, it's a numerator-denominator situation. If in that six-month test period, more than 50% of your hours on the Hubs meter are flown in interstate commercial flights. So we got to be landing or taking off outside of California, one or the other, and we've got to be on business. The business threshold is in Internal Revenue Code 162, ordinary and necessary kind of, I said I wasn't going to use revenue codes, and I just did. It's an ordinary and necessary test, which is a moderately low threshold. Ordinary and necessary means I'm in business. I'm using my aircraft on business. So I have had clients use, fly from one from the closing location to another location to look at real estate that they were thinking about buying, or to visit a customer of their business or whatever. It's a reasonably low threshold. So it's a reasonably easy exemption to get. And this is the one that most purchasers, since this has come into play in California, go for. Question over here. I can't hear you.
Trade-in allowance. You say yes.
Oh, I believe that's in California, I believe that's an error. Thank you. That slide is incorrect. I'm going to take questions, Mike, from California, because I know there's interest.
Yes, sir. On the common carrier exemption and talking about the what can be on board the airplane to qualify, you use the example of not being able to haul alcohol, for example. How would that relate to a repositioning flight under a 135 where the passenger perhaps is in Las Vegas, the airplane's originating in Van Nuys, going to Vegas empty, picking up the passenger, coming back? Would the total trip, both legs, qualify?
No, that was my point precisely. That was my point precisely. The way that the way the regulation is being administered by the Board of Equalization is that there must be passengers on board or property. You can also, 135 carriers can transport property. So I've never seen anyone do this, but I suppose the charter customer could say to the charter operator, I've got four boxes of files in my office in Santa Ana, and I need you to bring those files with you when you pick me up in Las Vegas. I don't know. But property being I suppose if that freight were broken out on the charter invoice as a separate line item, I'm charging you for hauling freight, I would think you'd have a fairly good case for making that stick. But the as a practical matter, the way the SBE administers these regulations is there has to be passengers on board. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, on this property tax, does it depend on the percentage of days or nights that it is hangared in the state? In other words, let's say the airplane is hangared here 50% of the time, less than 50%, greater than 50% of the time, as far as being assessed the property tax?
Yes, it does. And that was, I alluded to that. I have an example of, I have a client that lives in California, but he also lives in Florida. And so he spends roughly 50% of his time in California and roughly 50% of his time elsewhere. Now, elsewhere is more than Florida. And so what California will do is, first off, the aircraft has to spend a sufficient amount of time elsewhere to establish situs, which is a legal concept, but in plain English, you got to be there a while to establish situs. You can't be there a couple of days and establish situs. You have to have a presence there. You have to have maintenance. You have to have a hangar.
Greater than 50% of the time for situs?
In my examples, I have clients that live on both coasts, as I indicated, and what California will allow you to do is you take your California days is the numerator, and the denominator is 365. So, and then the reciprocal is, in other words, I didn't make that clear. If the aircraft spends 40% of its time in Florida and 50% of its time in California and 10% of its time elsewhere, California will only apportion that 40%. They won't, your transitory stops and stays in other places don't count. It's just where you have actually established situs. But yes, you can have a $100,000 tax bill become a $50,000 tax bill based on the number of days that an air, if it spent half of its time in Florida.
Okay, so it's apportioned. You don't get out of it totally. You just pay.
No, it's apportioned. It's apportioned.
Okay, thank you.
And again, that process is achieved by when you, what I do in my practice is when many times clients will ask me to review and or fill out their aircraft ownership verification forms. And so if I'm controlling that process and I know that I have an apportionment issue, or an opportunity for it, I prepare a letter and send the facts and the documentation to the assessor right along with that ownership verification statement and put them on notice right off. Because if you wait, if you do it with the verification form, then you have a chance of getting an agreement that, yes, we're going to allow you to apportion prior to the time they enter the roll. If you wait and then they issue the tax bill, then you're obliged to pay the entire tax bill and then fight to get your money back. I'd prefer not to pay and do it up front. One more question on California.
On the hot topics where you had mentioned the component, the sales tax component of the assessed value, would you also agree that the interstate commerce exemption would allow you to try to not pay the sales tax on the component of the assessed value?
So the scenario, if I understood correctly, is you use the interstate commerce exemption to avoid sales tax on the acquisition of the aircraft. 2 years later, now you're fighting with Los Angeles County about whether or not sales tax is a component of value, because now you've got your aircraft being used in a charter operation and more than 50% of it, let's assume, is charter time. Could you use the interstate commerce exemption argument saying, okay, I avoided sales tax because of the interstate commerce exemption? And the answer to that question is, I don't know. This is very much a hot topic. It's going to go to court. We will find out. There are cases have been presented where that fact pattern has been is the subject of an appeal that is on indefinite hold because we don't know which way this is going to stir. Okay. Any other more questions about California?
One more about California, then move
okay.
on.
The question is not really about California, but on the Part 135 operation, if a operator takes his aircraft out of 135, that exemption, can he be liable for back taxes for any reason in any state?
In any state?
Uh-huh.
I can't answer that. I don't know. What comes to my mind immediately when you say I have an aircraft in 135 and then I take it out of 135, I start worrying about the federal tax depreciation deduction, because now all of a sudden, when you were 135, you had one depreciation schedule. When you become Part 91, you have a different depreciation schedule. That can have some adverse consequences. The other thing is, if by bringing it out of 135, your business percentage falls below 50%, you have an even larger problem in that all that accelerated depreciation that you've been taking, you must now recapture, even though you haven't sold the airplane. So there's some ugly consequences to transitioning out of 135 status, perhaps, but I really can't answer the question about any state. Okay. Very good. I'd like to spend just a few minutes and talk about Nevada. Nevada's an orange state. California's an orange state. California has more laws, rules, and regulations, and their enforcement is, I think, how do you characterize it? It's their enforcement level is high. Let's just put it that way. They have a lot of energy about their enforcement. Nevada is an orange state, but it's actually, in my view, it's every bit as contentious, if not more so, to the aircraft owner than the state of California. California has this wonderful interstate commerce exemption. It is not difficult at all to qualify an aircraft for that exemption. Nevada does not have this. I mean, they have an interstate commerce exemption, but it won't work like that. It's not that easy. In Nevada, the interstate commerce exemption is outside the state and is used continuously for 12 months. So it's just a longer period of time. Their common carrier exemption, Nevada has a common carrier exemption, but it does, again, it doesn't apply to 135 operations. They do not have a casual sale exemption. In Nevada, however, they do have this thing called a related party situation. If you have companies that are merging, or if you sell the airplane, transfer it from one entity that you control into another entity that you control, you can avoid tax. They do have a flyaway exemption. That works pretty much like California's flyaway exemption works. Their trade-in allowance is dollar for dollar, and leases are taxed the same as a sale. In Nevada, the tax on a lease only applies when the aircraft is leased without a crew. So it doesn't apply to charter situations. The property tax in the state of Nevada is structured fairly differently than California. In Nevada, their property tax is driven off of the invoice price, the cost of the asset. So if you buy the asset 20 years ago, whatever that cost was, that's going to continue to be the basis of your property tax assessment. So what they do is they take 35% of the invoice price of the asset, of the aircraft in this case, and that becomes the basis, and then they apply a percentage to that, and that percentage can range up to $3.64 per hundred, but they have a maximum at 2.9. So it roughly works out, if you run those numbers, it's still roughly a 1% property tax in the state of California, or in the state of Nevada, excuse me. The interstate commerce exemption, oh, we spoke about that, and the common carrier exemption does not work for 135 operations. Okay, this brings us to Oregon. I like Oregon a lot. Oregon is a beautiful place. There's no sales tax. There's no property tax. They do have this really onerous registration fee. It maxes out at $187. So how many have done closings in Oregon? Everybody, right? Yeah. If in the transactions that I manage, I pretty much exclusively go to Oregon because my client base tends to be in California. I pretty much go to Oregon for closings. I have built a relationship with the people at the FBOs. They're very accommodative. It's just very easy. So Oregon is one of those green states. Nice to have someone so close that we can use in our tax planning. Okay, the state of Washington. Washington, again, is a little bit unusual as it relates to what we're used to in California. They have a 6% statewide tax, and then the local jurisdictions can add anywhere from a half a point to 2.4% on the sales tax. They have a common carrier exemption in the state of Washington, and it does apply to 135 operations. So that is a good thing if you live in the state of Washington. One of the unique things, I want to skip down to their flyaway exemption where I say, huh. Their law provides for a flyaway exemption. So, for example, if you live in California and you go to Washington, you buy an aircraft, and you just look at some general information and it says, yes, we have a flyaway exemption, be careful. The flyaway exemption in Washington State is structured like no other I've ever seen. It limits the exemption only to residents of states that are specifically laid out in the statute. And those states tend to be states that border the state of Washington. Now, there are some exceptions. The exceptions came about because of the way the statute is written. This law was put into place by the state of Washington to encourage business over the edge between Oregon and Idaho and these other the nearby states. So the way they wrote the law is that if you live in a state where the tax rate is less than 3%, then the flyaway exemption works. Well, clearly California, that doesn't work. So you can't rely you can put yourself in a position of being double taxed if you do a closing in the state of Washington and you're a California resident. So be careful with that. Washington also has this related party. You can transfer to a related party. Their definition of how that can be accomplished is fairly broad and reasonably loose. You can even do it by the adjustment of capital accounts, and it's a fairly broad situation. As with most states, however, the burden of proof to establish those facts is on the taxpayer. So there's some leeway that you can take there. Trade-in allowance in the state of Washington is dollar for dollar. And the treatment of leases in the state of Washington is the tax is due upon the collection of the lease payment. Let's see, what else? They don't have a property tax. Washington is a blue state. Okay, Mike, do I have a few more minutes, or am I? I'm just about out of time. Well, let me just then say that I won't try to talk about Florida and New York. I had thought I might make a few comments about those states. I think the essence of what I wanted to convey to you today is that tax planning in an aviation transaction is an absolute must. You want to do your tax planning as you plan the rest of the transaction. As you go through the process, you need to get your tax people, just as you get your broker, your insurance people, you need to build a team of professionals, and the tax planner is an integral part of that. And as I said earlier, be prepared. The art of tax planning when it comes to aviation is to find, you know, the best compromise. It's very difficult given the federal laws. We haven't talked about federal. We haven't talked about FAA considerations. So we've limited this conversation just to state tax issues. But when you put in the mix the state tax issues that we've talked about, the federal aviation regulations that are out there, and then the federal tax law, tax planning becomes a bit of a challenge. So the hope, what you hope to achieve is the best compromise. And that's my presentation. Are there any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, George. That was excellent. Thank you.